Tonight, breaking news, the dramatic scenes in Maryland as flash flooding sweeps through a city outside Baltimore. While in the southeast, tens of millions are in the path of a potentially dangerous storm. An American delegation arrives in North Korea to prepare for a summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un that could be on again. A head-snapping turn from just a few days ago. The bold new approach to helping those addicted to heroin and other opioid drugs, and signs that it may be working. A family in mourning after a baby girl dies in a hot car. The new warning about a deadly problem that persists.
This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening, I'm Peter Alexander. Kate has the night off tonight. We are following breaking news, severe weather on two fronts. At this hour, a flash flood is ripping through a Maryland community with rescues now underway. As you can see there, punishing rains are turning city streets into a raging river. At the very same time, in the Gulf Coast, states of emergency now stretch from Florida to Mississippi. Alberto, the first named storm of this season, is expected to make landfall early tomorrow with heavy rain and strong winds. More than 20 million Americans are now facing flood watches. We have two reports, and we begin with WNBC's Dave Price. Dave?
Well, this dangerous situation continues as we speak in Ellicott City, just about half an hour or so to the southwest of Baltimore, Maryland. And the radar picture shows the whole story until you take a look at this video. We have a flash flood emergency declared in the area. That's over and above the flash flood watches and warnings. Look at the speed, the volume, and the depth of the water flowing through here. As you can see, emergency responders already doing rapid rescues. This on top of a storm that first hit in July 2016. That was supposed to be a 1,000-year storm. This one on par or worse. That last storm in 2016 took two lives. EMS, as we mentioned, still responding. 6 inches of rain in the last 4 hours, and those water rescues will continue. Now let's go to our second issue. As we're watching through the rest of the weekend, Alberto. Let's go through the details right now on where it is in relation to Tampa, 165 miles to the west at this hour, with winds at about 50 miles per hour. Could intensify by about 10 to 15 miles per hour over the next 24 hours. It's moving to the north-northwest at about 12 miles per hour, with landfall expected, let's say, between 10 and 1 p.m. Remember, part of the panhandle in the central time zone. That's going to spread rain. That's going to continue flooding. That's the big concern, that along with strong winds as we head through the next 48 hours. Dangerous surf and rip currents as well. Before all that moisture continues to spread up north, this is going to be a story which is going to be more of a headache as the weekend progresses and as the work week continues. We're watching both stories at this hour, Peter.
All right, Dave, thank you very much. That storm in the Gulf, as Dave just noted, is intensifying tonight, heading toward the Florida Panhandle. NBC's Maya Rodriguez is there for us this evening.
It's not how you would normally spend the day in the sand on the official start of summer.
I don't know how this is going to go, but we'll find out.
Residents in Panama City, Florida, hoping to protect their property.
I am filling up sandbags to hopefully keep the rainwater from coming in my front door.
A weekend washout shaping up because of Alberto. The storm expected to dump up to a foot of rain across parts of Florida, Alabama, and Mississippi. States of emergency already declared in all three states.
The big thing is down here, everybody's got to watch. These things are unpredictable.
This storm forming even before the official start of hurricane season on June 1st and drenching parts of western Cuba on Saturday. Alberto is now expected to make landfall along Florida's panhandle on Monday before moving inland across the south. Flash flood watches posted from Louisiana to Florida with concerns about coastal flooding during high tide. And more concerns that heavy rain will lead to more sinkholes near the villages in central Florida after several opened up this week. And along the Gulf Coast.
I'm actually terrified of the amount of rain that is predicted to come in.
A hope that Alberto will make a quick exit.
You just never know with Mother Nature.
In addition to the rain, the wind is now beginning to pick up here, and there are red flag warnings all up and down the coast here because of high surf and dangerous rip currents. Peter.
Maya Rodriguez along the Florida Panhandle tonight. Maya, thank you. Just 3 days after President Trump called off that historic sit-down with Kim Jong-un, a face-to-face with the North Korean dictator is now looking more likely. New indications tonight from the Korean Peninsula and from Washington that things are once again heading in that direction. NBC's Bill Neely has the very latest from Seoul.
First came the surprise summit between Kim Jong-un and South Korea's President Moon. Now the surprise visit, an American delegation arriving here at the same border crossing and traveling into North Korea. NBC News has learned it's led by U.S. Ambassador Sung Kim, who's negotiated with North Korea before. He'll meet Cho Son-hui, the North's deputy foreign minister, who undermined talks last week by calling Mike Pence a political dummy. They'll prepare for a summit that was pronounced dead, but seems alive again.
It's moving along very nicely. So we're looking at June 12th in Singapore. That hasn't changed.
The momentum was boosted by a Korean summit of hugs and smiles. Kim Jong-un asking for the meeting and, according to President Moon, committing to a successful summit with President Trump.
And they want a peace treaty because it validates them as a nuclear weapon state. It ensures that Trump won't attack. And most importantly, it means money.
Moon also reported Kim is worried about trusting America not to attack and depose him if he does give up nuclear weapons. North Korea's state media says Kim is determined the summit with Trump should happen. Everyone's saying they want it for their own reasons. But the problems of trust and what they all mean by denuclearization are still far from resolved.
Well, another high-level meeting between North and South Korea is scheduled Friday. And another U.S. team, this time from the White House, is due to begin work in Singapore soon to prepare for a summit. The table that President Trump kicked over last Thursday now appears to be being set once again. Peter?
Bill Neely, thank you very much. And for more on the potential risks and rewards of this Singapore summit, we turn to White House correspondent Kelly O'Donnell. Kelly, what are the main obstacles left?
Well, Peter, as Washington braces for what may be the next surprise, a few key issues are raised by officials in both parties, with allies and China leaning in. Preparation. With a U.S. delegation inside North Korea tonight and planners working on Singapore logistics, lawmakers and Asia experts say they're concerned about having sufficient time to prepare the president and allow the U.S. team to lay a detailed diplomatic foundation before President Trump would ever meet Kim face to face. Next, trust. A big unknown is how to deal with North Korea given its unreliable history. Can any handshake constitute a real deal and lasting peace? And endgame. The U.S. goal is full and irreversible denuclearization. But even allies of the president are skeptical Kim will agree to that. So could any other outcome still be worthwhile, like simply opening normalized dialogue with North Korea, freezing or phasing out its nuclear program? And should the president be ready to offer certain things, like sanctions relief, without going too far? And Peter, late today, the president tweeted effusively about the, quote, brilliant potential he sees ahead for North Korea, a sweetener before the summit, perhaps. Peter?
Kelly O'Donnell on the White House North Lawn tonight. Kelly, thank you very much. Former President George H.W. Bush is back in the hospital tonight after experiencing low blood pressure and fatigue. A spokesman for the 93-year-old says he will likely remain at the hospital in Maine for a few days for observation. Just yesterday, the former president visited with veterans at an American Legion pancake breakfast there in Kennebunkport. His office says he is awake and alert and fortunately not in any discomfort. That teacher from Indiana who was hailed as a hero for stopping an armed student inside his classroom was released from the hospital this weekend. Jason Seaman suffered gunshot wounds as he tackled the shooter who opened fire. A 13-year-old girl was also wounded and is listed in critical but stable condition. Tonight, the death of a baby in Tennessee is drawing new attention to a problem that keeps taking young lives. Children being left in hot cars, more than half a dozen dying already this year. NBC's Kerry Sanders on just how quickly your car can become dangerously hot.
In Nashville, a family in mourning after their one-year-old baby girl died on Wednesday.
Her father tells police he accidentally left her in the back seat of his truck while temperatures outdoors exceeded 85 degrees. It is the seventh hot car death this year. Last year, 43 children died in hot car deaths. Leland Jacobson knows that pain all too well.
It's the worst day of my life.
6 years ago, he forgot his seven-month-old son, Luke, in the back seat of their car.
I mean, there's not a day that goes by I don't think of of Luke.
Jacobson now on a mission.
Because people easily dismiss that can never happen to me, that happens to bad parents. It can happen to anyone. And I didn't believe that before probably either, but it can.
And it's not just a case of parking in the direct sun. Researchers at Arizona State and the University of California, San Diego discovered in tests, parking in the shade can be just as deadly.
The idea that because I've parked the car in the shade, I'm safe, it's okay, is not really the case.
In the sun, when the outside temperature is over 100 degrees, the thermometer inside hits an average of 116, seats 123 degrees, the steering wheel 127, and the dashboard averaged 157 degrees, hot enough to cause third-degree burns if a child touched it, all in just 60 minutes. In the shade, a car or van still turns into an oven. It just takes longer to heat up. Even with some car companies now installing technology to remind parents, Jacobson says,
always check the back seat.
Tragic loss he hopes no one else ever experiences. Kerry Sanders, NBC News, Miami.
A big recall tonight involving Spam and another product made by Hormel. The Department of Agriculture is recalling 228,000 pounds of Spam and Hormel's Black Label Luncheon Loaf. The move comes after four consumers complained about metal objects in the food with minor injuries reported. You can find more details about the recall on our website. That's NBCNews.com. Now to this country's opioid epidemic and an innovative new program that's helping people dependent on heroin or painkillers. It's being tried in Western New York State, and the idea is simple: to bring treatment, therapy, as well as doctors and nurses to them instead of waiting for those with substance abuse issues to seek help for themselves. Here's our senior national correspondent, Kate Snow.
Mona Lisa McEachin is driving this nondescript van around Buffalo looking for people who need help beating their dependency on opioids.
When I see them, I see me.
For 20 years, she was in and out of jail.
I smoked marijuana, I drank, I sniffed heroin if it was available. I would do pills, whatever was there, I had to get high.
You just gotta take it one day at a time.
On this day, she meets up with Mary Catherine at the courthouse downtown. Mary Catherine had recently missed some court appearances and didn't tell Mona Lisa.
I could have helped you, right? But somewhere in there I lost you.
Right.
Okay. I'll always find time for you, but I need you to be honest. Always
Mary Catherine says she was off drugs for 12 years, running her own business, but after struggling to cope with personal loss, she tried heroin.
I slipped up and I found myself really fast and back in the system. It just, my whole life just.
It's okay.
People don't understand it and they judge you really harshly based on, you know, I just feel like such a criminal or something, you know, and if you knew who I was, really.
Tell me who you are really.
I'm a mom who loves her daughter more than anything in the world, and now my grandson. I never thought I could love someone more than her. And I do, and they are my world, and right now they're hurting so much because of what I've done.
When it comes to the babies, I didn't even raise my children. My mother raised my children. Today, all my children have fallen back into my life. What I'm trying to tell you is it all comes back.
Yeah.
The mobile unit is on the street every day, offering medical services in addition to counseling, helping people leaving the ER.
It may be that this is their window where they say, okay, I'm ready. We've had them take them from the emergency department, discharge, and directly to treatment.
The unit even stops at the bus station.
I don't count people out, and I know if I can do it, they can do it.
Hoping house calls and role models
give us a call.
Get people on the road to recovery. Kate Snow, NBC News, Buffalo.
Powerful personal stories still ahead tonight. What may be the last hope for some desperately ill patients, but is it worth the risk? We're back with a controversial plan to get unapproved drugs to desperately ill patients. This week, President Trump is expected to sign a bill known as Right to Try. And as NBC's Jeff Bennett reports, for some, these drugs might just be the last best hope.
For 50-year-old Frank Rivera, even the basics now feel like a burden.
I was a runner. I ran marathon.
Now the former construction boss walks with a cane and struggles to breathe. He's battling Parkinson's and sarcoidosis, a rare disease that damaged his lungs.
And what does that feel like?
It's painful. Very, very painful.
It's been a decade-long ordeal, and he's run out of options.
I've tried all these other things, and there's nothing left for me, and I don't give up.
His last chance, so-called right to try legislation. The bill just passed the House. It'll allow an estimated 1 million terminally ill Americans access to unproven experimental treatments. President Trump's personally pushed for it and is expected to sign it into law.
It's time for Congress to give these wonderful, incredible Americans the right to try.
The drug industry hasn't taken a formal position on the plan, but critics say it skirts FDA rules designed to protect patients.
This bill will not improve access very much and will create some risk for vulnerable patients around costs and the care they receive near the end of their lives.
What kind of risks?
Being told that a treatment may be more promising, more effective than it really has been proven to be so far.
The FDA already has a pathway to allow terminally ill patients access to unapproved drugs that have shown some promise in clinical trials. Frank Rivera has been turned down twice, though, and says right to try is his only hope.
I want to see my daughter graduate. I want to see, you know, her get married.
Like so many, fighting for their lives and a healthier future. Jeff Bennett, NBC News, Washington.
That rumbling sound echoing through Washington this Memorial Day weekend, the annual Rolling Thunder Ride for Freedom, riders from across the country taking part. It's the 31st time they've held this event that pays tribute to veterans and those who gave their lives serving our country. When we come back, the uphill battle to keep a beloved women's roller derby league rolling on. Finally tonight, a rough and tumble roller derby league is taking on a new challenge, finding another venue to call home in Portland, Oregon. They are known as the Rose City Rollers. Hundreds of them are banding together to keep the league on skates, showing love for a sport that has given them and their fans plenty of thrills. Here's NBC's Tammy Leitner.
Lock it down, lock it down. Handle.
This is roller derby. A sport where skaters score points by passing each other.
See how.
And the Rose City Rollers are the largest female league in the U.S., some 600 strong.
That was a nice hit right there.
They're an iconic part of Portland and a lifesaver for players like 18-year-old Sophie Arnold,
makes it out,
who says the sport was her salvation.
I was at a really bad place when I first started. I lost my friends. There was like a lot of bullying involved with that.
Roller derby brought this one shy girl back from the brink.
You'll come into me, and basically I check you with my shoulder.
And she's become really the team's powerhouse blocker.
Thinking back on the person that I was and how sad and awful I felt, I never feel like that anymore. I know it's because of derby. I know it is.
But the league Sophie has come to count on is in danger. After 12 years, they're losing their home because fire codes have changed and upgrades are too expensive.
You guys are about to be shut down, essentially.
Yeah, we're in a pickle. I mean, we have a few months to basically find a new location because this place doesn't have sprinklers.
The city's skyrocketing real estate prices are also a challenge for the nonprofit league, meaning hundreds of young female skaters and their fans could lose out.
I love watching young women show their strength and their courage.
It's that type of courage keeping the league from giving up, holding fundraiser exhibition games and calling on the community to help.
We are raising strong, confident, well-adjusted young women and girls.
Empowered by lessons in teamwork and sure that together they'll find a solution to keep Rose City rolling. Tammy Leitner, NBC News, Portland, Oregon.
Good luck to the Rose City Rollers. That is NBC Nightly News for this Sunday. I'm Peter Alexander. On this Memorial Day weekend, we're going to leave you tonight with a scene at Fort Snelling National Cemetery in Minnesota. For the first time in 35 years, flags have been placed at each of the headstones. That's more than 175,000 of them as we remember those who made the ultimate sacrifice serving our country. For all of us here at NBC News, have a good night.